This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
All right, there's a place I wanted to start today, but I can't right now because the number of things that the shipping container is arguing about. I wanted to talk about this thing we had to apologize for yesterday. I will explain that in a moment, but first, you will not believe what it is that gets Billy flustered. There is a thing that gets Billy flustered that I don't believe flusters anyone except Billy. Soon we will find out why Chris Cody is on the cusp of alleging that American sweetheart Katie Ledecky is a fraud and a liar.
What?
Stugatz has something for Jim Cantore. We can't get to that soon enough. Billy's been sitting there listening to a Jeter press conference, waiting for what is it, Billy? One word? You're waiting for you got how many minutes into a press conference here? Waiting for what from Jeter? As he basically says, yeah, we were reckless because, you know, we didn't get enough information about the pandemic being dangerous and all.
Well, that's kind of what he said. So the report is, and what's been a buzz on Twitter, Dan, is that Milk may have been blamed for why it is that coronavirus was spread amongst the Marlins, that a Marlin left the hotel for Milk. And I think that stems from a tweet from John Heyman, and I am 25 minutes into a 35-minute press conference, and I've yet to hear him say the word Milk is to blame. I heard him say they left for coffee, they may have left to buy some clothes, they may have left to eat dinner at another teammate's house, but Milk has not been mentioned yet. So I'm wondering if that was just creative license or if maybe John Heyman has some inside info on the
all
Milk.
Right. Well, someone reported carousing too, and Jeter's saying it's not carousing, it's just recklessness. But I don't want to start there either, because the place I want to start is I want to have a better understanding of how it is that you guys in the local hour today, many of you on delay, today's local hour is the shipping container watching yesterday's Heat game together with no rhythm. But that's not even the interesting part, Stugatz. The interesting part is that dinosaur columnist Greg Cody of the Miami Herald lost power during the Heat game, and in the single flimsiest effort ever involving an underwear column, he wrote a newspaper column with basically his son's descriptions of the game as his reporting. Because what are you shaking your head no about? Your power went down. Did you? How much of the game did you actually see, Cody?
We saw the first half and some of the third quarter before the power went out. I had already written an early column. All I did was update it with the result, basically. I had already written that, and a lot of it was from a podcast interview with Amin Al-Hassan, that, you know, no matter the result, don't write off the Heat in terms of reaching the NBA Finals. This is a very plausible year for them to do it, and I explained why in the column.
Guillermo, put it on the poll at Le Batard Show. Do you want to read a newspaper column from a columnist whose power went out and he didn't see the defining moments of the game? Yes or no?
I saw it on the internet. I mean, right, I'm following it.
Yeah,
I know what happened.
You didn't have power. You didn't see it on the internet as it happened. You
they went from 17 down and lost by 4 or whatever it was. I know what happened.
When power was restored, I think is when he's saying that he watched it. But I am interested in reading a column that is written. The most crucial points are written through the eyes and the mouth of his son, Christopher Cody. And I am interested. And Dan, I would say this, in the middle of a world pandemic, when your power might go out at any time and we are desperate times, desperate measures, if you're Greg Cody, you got to do what you got to do to finish off that column. And if that means finishing it off by watching other people watch the game or listening to what his son has to say, that's what you have to do.
Okay, this is what I'm telling you about Greg Cody's aging process, newspapers' aging process, the columnist's aging process. Greg Cody has almost literally turned his son into a seeing eye dog. Greg Cody is wandering around sports, unable to see things because he's so old and his power's down and his vision doesn't work. So he just brings his son on airplanes with him as a comfort animal and as a seeing eye dog.
Chris or his binoculars.
Right. My effort yesterday was nothing short of heroic. You know, to manage to have a power outage in the middle of a pandemic and yet to get that column out, I mean, readers all over the country are thanking me right now, not vilifying me.
It should be noted here how terrible my play-by-play was. So he was getting not only through me, he was getting just terrible descriptions of what was actually going on.
I didn't want to say anything because I didn't know how Chris edited it to make it seem like he was doing a better job. But there were times where he said, like, oh, this guy made one of two free throws. And then a minute later, my TV caught up and I go, wait a minute, he missed both. What are you talking about? He was giving us the wrong score. We didn't really know what was going on. There was a flagrant foul that wasn't described whatsoever.
Well, that was the deciding points in the game. It was a flagrant foul on Kelly Olynyk that they then rescinded after the game. Or they didn't rescind it, but they admitted that they were wrong about it. How is it, Chris Cody, that you arrive in a place where you are doing super poor play-by-play? Because I'm telling you this, the role players with the social justice messages, they're confusing.
Yeah.
The role players, I'm telling you, all throughout this league, I didn't realize how much I miss just a tucker on the back of the uniform because I don't know who's out there. Like, I believe that person believes in peace and equality, but I don't know who you are.
Well, lucky for you, Dan, yesterday the NBA added everybody's names to the jersey on top of their social justice message. So there's about 18,000 letters on everyone's jerseys now because they seem to want to go to great lengths to just make sure that Jimmy Butler's last name is still on his jersey. So now everyone needs their last name on their jersey.
Chris, how would you describe, tell people why it is they should or shouldn't go to the local hour? Are you saying it's good? Is it bad? Is it bad? Is it good because it's bad?
Well, it's classic local hour. Like, we're watching the Heat game. We react in real time. If you're a Heat fan, you should definitely check it out because it's fun. We got a close finish at the end. And, you know, it's just a classic local hour. I think it's worth listening to. If we tried something different, maybe we won't do it again. Next time, maybe we'll all watch it on the same TV so we're not at different times in the game. You know, we're learning, Dan. We're learning as we go.
We will get to why it is Chris Cody is right on the cusp of calling America's sweetheart Katie Ledecky a fraud. We will get to why it is that Billy is flustered. We will get to what Stugatz has for Jim Cantore, and we will find out whether Jeter in the last 10 minutes of his press conference did actually mention milk. And because we like to sink into our discomforts, I have to get into how this whole thing played out yesterday with, you know, what happened with Jonathan Isaac. So we will get to that at some point here over the next couple of hours.
Welcome to Greg Cody Tuesday, a weekly celebration of Caucasian mediocrity.
Stan Van Gundy has been playing a professional clown on the air while being unemployed. 5 years, $35 million from the Detroit Pistons.
Because no one listens to us, Dan.
Yeah, I guess that's part
of
it.
Reach.
$7 million a year for our co-host. That's not happening for Greg Cody.
Actually, I'm negotiating with Golden State right now. I meant to tell you that. Because Stan didn't want the job. So they contacted me.
Shock Eater!
This is another Greg Cody Tuesday. For over a decade, a weekly celebration of white mediocrity.
We will get to what Stugatz has for Jim Cantore in a second. We will find out whether Chris Cody has gone over the edge and is willing to accuse America's sweetheart Katie Ledecky of fraud and counterfeit. We will see if he has gathered enough reporting information in order to do that. We will get to what I imagine are 10 pretty unforgettable scoops from Greg Cody in a lifetime of work, 4 decades as a journalist. Stugatz, during the break, accused Greg Cody of doing nothing on a Hall of Fame level. Put it on the poll, please, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Has Greg Cody done nothing at a Hall of Fame level? Because I believe Stugatz is a first balloter there. Like, yeah. I believe Stugatz is uniquely qualified in order to be the gatekeeper on this particular Hall of Fame. Who else is in this Hall of Fame, incidentally?
I was speaking from experience, and I hope Greg takes it as a compliment because it was intended as such. I mean, it is hard to do nothing at a Hall of Fame level, and Dan has not one, but two of those associated with his radio show. Congratulations.
Well, I mean, what I love about our radio show is that somehow things happen that should have been on the air, off the air. So the conversation just took place as soon as we went to break, where Tony asked Billy, and it's a relevant question. It's such an easy fix. Why don't you just ask your barber to loosen up the collar a little bit? This, of course, also flustered Billy, this very question. But Tony's sharp this morning because Chris Cody, during the Zoom chat, was trying to get the conversation going about what's the worst part of a haircut, because he doesn't like the danger cuts that can happen behind the ear. But when he asked Tony, what's the worst part of a haircut, I think Tony had the winning hand. He's like, the small talk. I thought it was such a good answer. I thought it was such a good answer. Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Is the worst part about getting a haircut the small talk with the barber? Because I believe that's an excellent point. Do you have something better than that, Stugatz?
I know. I happen to love a haircut. The worst part for me is when it's over. I find it to be very cathartic. I enjoy it. And to eliminate the small talk, what I've done now, because I'm with Tony, that would have been my answer until I started walking into the haircuttery or Supercuts, the one by my house, with earbuds. I mean, that's how you eliminate small talk right there. I don't even have them on. I'm not even listening to anyone or talking to anybody. It just prevents the barber from talking to me. It's great.
Well, I go to different barbershops than you guys do, and I can tell you that the worst part of getting a haircut is the edging. Those hurt. Like, you start bleeding. These are sharp tools that they're using on your head.
Yes, that's what Chris Cody is alleging. So go ahead and put it on the poll. Worst part of getting a haircut, the small talk or the edging? So we've been telling you, Greg Cody has been a journalist across four decades. He wants to get to 50 years at the Miami Herald. That's his goal here. And what are you, 2 years away, Cody?
He's muted.
Yeah, Cody, I put in the chat, make sure Greg is unmuted, and of course you're muted, Greg.
Yeah, I said something like that. You didn't hear me?
You think that's attainable, Dan, 2 years? I mean, that's touch and go at this point.
For me or for the industry?
Put it on the poll, Guillermo. What's going to die first, newspapers or Cody at Le Batard Show?
That's a good question. Very good question.
I mean, Greg, which part? Like, the only thing I asked during the break is, can you unmute your microphone? It's the only thing I asked you. What happened? Explain to me what happens with this, because I'd like to understand how you continue to get worse at this.
Well, I happen to have a sheet of paper over where I would press the mute button, you know, unmute it. So it's just a happenstance, you know. I got
it was the paper's fault.
Yeah.
Well, in a manner of speaking, yeah.
Unlucky.
Yeah. Blocking my view.
All right, this has got to be a funny list. Let's do this right now. So I am maintaining over almost five decades that Greg Cody hasn't broken any big stories, that the big story that he broke was betraying me and reporting that lifelong single man Dan was getting married. So let's do this. The 10th biggest scoop of Greg Cody's career is?
Well, can I start by just saying one thing? Before I start with number 10.
You know what? Let's go to commercial right now. Guillermo just informed us during the break that he owns an acre on Mars. All of us were very confused by this. But before we get to the alleged acre that Guillermo owns on Mars, I just want the audience to have a sneak peek behind the scenes, lest you think that Greg Cody's general incompetence is an act. I wish we were televised so that you could see how his son is just made to feel great shame at how his father just can't do the most basic things, like make a sound so we could get the joke. Like, but he just stared at us for four full seconds, and I swear if we had sat there, it would have been 40 seconds, because I have no idea what Greg Cody was doing as we tried to get him on the Hard Network out, and he had no earthly idea where we were in the show. Stugatz, how did you experience this?
I experience your frustration. I understand why you are frustrated. It's just Greg Cody being Greg Cody. Most of the times it works out, his awfulness. Sometimes it does not. I think what happened there is he got unlucky again with a piece of paper going over the mute button, which would be the second time in an hour, which is a record for a show for Greg. It's unlucky, Greg.
Well, I did an analysis, and what happened was I did everything right. It turns out, because the reason was I took a split second to make sure that I was unmuted. And then I was a split second away from talking when the Hard Network out hit. So
see, that to me is the most frustrating part about him, is that he did it. He ruined the end of the segment, and then he goes on pushing forward like nothing wrong. This wasn't on me. This was just bad timing.
Well, he always defends it, and the reason that Stugatz could tell that I was frustrated is because I took off my mask and threw it at the Zoom camera. So that's the reason Stugatz wasn't exactly a sleuth there. I was just sort of staring at Greg Cody as Greg Cody stared back at me silently for a full 4 seconds, where he thinks that that is good radio. And I can't really argue that silence is often better than Greg Cody talking. So put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebitard Show. Is silence better than Greg Cody talking? Now let's review why it is that he has this job. A half a century of journalism scoops that I imagine are going to be pretty pathetic. Number 10, Greg Cody.
Number 10, a Dolphins linebacker goes on the record for the first time about his financial and marital woes, depression, and past cocaine use.
Who was that?
I'd prefer to tell you off air, because he still lives in the area, and I don't, all these years later, I'd rather not throw him under the bus and have him.
Didn't you already write it in the newspaper?
Yeah, but it was like 1992 or something.
Right, but it's still there. Like, we could just find out.
Couldn't we just do a search and find out who you're talking about? Must you make everything difficult? Tony, look up for us. Let's betray Cody right back. Number nine.
First reported, the Fort Lauderdale Strikers plan to move on from Coach Cor Vanderhart after the season, despite reaching the Soccer Bowl. They did.
That's a big scoop right there.
Number eight.
You got it.
Number eight might not fit the list exactly, but wrote the infamous Trade Marino column in 1993. The Dolphins would go an additional 7 seasons still with no Marino Super Bowl ring.
Wait a minute. You said to trade him and keep Scott Mitchell. That's not a scoop. Like, you went on a local television newscast with your voice and face altered because you told Miami that they should trade Dan Marino. You were like an FBI informant being interviewed on Channel 10 by Frank Fort.
That's exactly true. That was a great moment. But over time, I have turned out to be right.
They pixelated his face.
It's like a retroactive scoop.
It is not right. It's not a scoop of any kind. Yes, Billy. Number seven.
Eldest son Dave Shula, in my podcast, The Greg Cody Show, shares intimate details of his father's sharp decline and final days.
Oh, dear God.
None of these are scoops.
No, and that one was macabre. That one was morbid. Like, you shouldn't be taking credit for that.
It happened.
So one of the greatest scoops of your life was a couple of months ago.
That's right.
But his son did a bunch of interviews that week. You weren't the only one to get those thoughts.
I didn't hear any other interview with Dave Shula in which he said what he told us.
All right. Number six, Greg Cody.
Reported that pressure from Mothers Against Drunk Driving was causing Marlins to quietly move away from plans for a statue in honor of deceased star Jose Fernandez.
These are macabre. Number five.
On decision night for LeBron James, accurately reported the Heat briefly pulled a planned full-page Welcome LeBron ad from the next day's Miami Herald over concerns he might change his mind before reinstating the ad just before the paper's deadline.
Dan reported LeBron was coming here.
How can anyone verify that they pulled it and put it back? You just said that they pulled it, but it printed anyways.
They did. I knew from people who worked at the Herald.
What'd you do? You just went down to the printing press and asked them? Like, that was the scoop?
I had my sources.
you just called the Herald's advertising department? Like, what kind of scoop is that?
I had my sources. What can I tell you? I will not reveal my sources.
You won't even reveal the dolphin that you publicly told us was doing cocaine.
I will tell you off air, and if you think it's okay to say it on air, then we'll go ahead and do it.
You wrote about it!
But I didn't name him right here.
Oh.
I mean, I'm not like...
But you named him in the column, did you not? I mean...
Of course I did, yes.
Okay, so...
But you quoted him in the column sharing these details with you.
It's true.
So you're protecting him 28 years later?
Yeah, shouldn't I? I mean...
But you already put it in the paper!
It's a delicate subject. I don't...
Then don't put it in the paper!
but 28 years ago, it was obviously with his understanding and everything. But 3 decades later, do I want to rehash all this publicly and name him? I don't know.
Wait, but you got his approval at the time where it probably hurt him and stung him and harmed him the most. And now 28 years later, you have reservations about revealing who it was?
I do promise to reveal it to you guys off the air. And then if you think it's...
Number four, Greg Cody.
I report a column following a controversial 2006 Dallas playoff loss to the Heat that Mavs owner Mark Cuban was heard shouting at Commissioner David Stern, "Your league is rigged." Cuban denied it. Days later, the NBA fined Cuban a then staggering $250,000 for acts of misconduct on the night of that game.
Did you report that exclusively, or did other people also hear him say that? Was that an exclusive scoop?
Well, I think you know who the source was. And I don't think anybody else reported it.
Number three, Greg Cody.
Won APSC National Large Circulation Award for Best News Story for an expose on growing conflict between athletic and academic interests involving Miami Hurricanes football.
I wrote that.
You did not.
Yes, I did. What do you mean?
It must have been a different story. This was written by me in like 1988. It was me and Ronnie Ramos, actually. I should have given him credit. The two of us.
Number two.
Reported via a club source that increasingly dissatisfied Dolphins owner Stephen Ross was considering an in-season coaching change in 2011. Tony Sparano was fired soon after.
And finally, the greatest scoop of Greg Cody's half a century in journalism is...
Thrilled to break the joyous news of Dan Lebatard's engagement to Valerie.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Is Los Angeles overrated at Lebatard Show? Yes or no? Because that overcrowding is a total nightmare. I like better where SVP is right now. He's in San Francisco. The PGA Championship at TPC Harding Park is this week. Thank you, as always, Scott, for making time for us. What kind of lengths and precautions do you have to go to even get to San Francisco? Never mind broadcasting from there.
Well, it's like everything else at the moment, right, Dan? I mean, it's, you know, you get on airplanes and you're wearing masks and you get here and I quarantined for a day at the hotel there, got a test and waited for a result and I wasn't to go anywhere. Unfortunately, I did take a trip to In-N-Out because that's what you're meant to do if you're from the East Coast and you're somewhere where you can get one of those hamburgers. I did that before I knew I wasn't supposed to. But I just went to the drive-thru, and I don't think I did anything wrong, got my test. It was negative. That meant I was then allowed to come out here. But even here, it's, you know, people are doing what they've been instructed to do. People are keeping their distance. Everyone's got masks, except for the time where they're doing what I'm doing right now or when we're on the air. And it's, you know, it's interesting to see the way these protocols have been implemented in a way where it feels still odd, still feels foreign to us, and yet it's what you just sort of reflexively do. You know what I mean?
Super irresponsible. He's a menace to society, this guy. He needs a burger so badly. I don't know if you've seen it, Stugatz, like the schools in Georgia where you've got all these people with no masks in a hallway, that's Scott Van Pelt going to get an In-N-Out burger because he can't help himself because he's got an addiction.
Dan, the line to the In-N-Out at the drive-thru was, it was into the street. So there were many of us there. I had my mask on. They had masks on at In-N-Out. I ate the hamburger. I tested post-burger, and here we are.
Still super negative.
That doesn't make it right. I mean, think about Rinaldi. I mean, think about everyone else.
Think about everyone else. Think about the entire network, Scott Van Pelt. You're taking everything you have and going to Washington with it. You're going to infect everybody because you had to have one of those tasty burgers.
Negative. Test negative. I'm great.
Are you going to get more burgers now that you've tested negative? Like how dangerous?
No.
Like what?
No, I won't. I'll send someone or something. I don't know what I'll do. It's just any East Coast person that gets anywhere in within a 50-mile radius of that big giant yellow arrow is just drawn to it like a moth to a flame.
Tell us more about your order. Give us all the specifics. Put it on the poll, Guillermo, please, at Lebatard Show, even during a pandemic.
You go 3x3. You go 3x3, Dan, because a double-double is not enough, but 2 double-doubles is gluttonous. So you go 3x3, which means 3 patties on a bun, which is a lot of food, but it's you know, I'm a big guy. I could take care of that. So that's the Stanford Steve order. He spent a great deal of time here, obviously, at Stanford, so he's the one that helps me understand the order. And Steve says you need to eat the fries first because the fries, a lot of folks don't think are very good, but if you eat the fries first, then they don't taste as dry and as plain post-burger. So that's what I did.
So do you eat the fries in the car?
Of course. Yeah, you sit there in a car and you eat like an absolute animal. I talked about it through the years with Rustillo. Watching me eat is one of the most horrifying things you could ever do. But me eating that in a car in a parking lot, I mean, just think about it. It's just so it's such a sad scene. And in the middle of a pandemic where, as it turns out, I wasn't meant to do it, but I did it. I mean, you know, it's all so sad.
I love the idea of somebody who watches ESPN thinking that you're this glamorous network star and looking into the car next to them. I imagine a rental car. I imagine that ESPN's not letting you get a good rental car. And there's lanky, bald Scott Van Pelt with all sorts of triple patty burger on his face.
Just annihilating, just housing a burger with not even stopping to breathe. It's just a horror show.
Wait, Scott, did any ketchup or mayo find its way to your clothing? Anything?
No. It's like central vac. It's like a HVAC with like really, really strong pull, man. Like nothing. There's no, what's it, detritus? Like there's not even a crumb, man. Nothing.
How about the napkin situation? How many of them were there? How many were used? Because you can't eat a burger like that without napkins.
No, they give you a good wad of them. I'd say there must have been like 5 or 6 just balled up. But then me again, like I don't unfold one daintily, right? You know, I use the whole wad of them in my hand like a towel. You know what I mean? It's just, I'm not painting a very pretty picture here, but this, at least it's accurate.
Is your wife horrified by how you eat?
I do better when I'm in her company. I mean, I don't eat like that in front of her. But this is, I'm by myself in a rental car, like doing off the radar stuff that I wasn't meant to do. You know?
Anything goes. I mean.
Yeah. I mean, it's already a little bit questionable activity to start with. So I'm not as concerned when I'm solo there.
Chris Cody gave a thumbs up there in the middle of that interview. You too, Chris Cody, are someone who eats differently around your wife than when you're in private.
Oh yeah. I'm the king of like the second dinner that like my wife has no idea about. Scott, you know that move?
Yeah. I try to put on airs around certain people, but I mean, again, in this setting, it was as I described. There was no glamour involved. No.
So can you tell us about the specifics? Do you have any idea like what this is going to be like? Golf should be safe, right?
They've done an amazing job. And this is the PGA of America and PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan from the beginning has said, look, we're going to test aggressively. We'll probably have positives, which they have had. And they have sat the guys down and guys largely, as I understand it, that those who have tested positive in the past were asymptomatic. And they, as soon as they tested negative, they were able to come back out here. And they have done a spectacular job And it works because, unlike, say, the Marlins, where you have a team, these are independent contractors. You're outside. You can keep your distance from one another. And they've done a great job on the tour. Now, this week, it's different only in the sense that the trophy they're playing for is more significant. It's a major. Anyone that would suggest, well, there's an asterisk. Well, that just feels like a reflexive reaction to anything that's done now isn't the same. Well, I would disagree with that. I mean, this is the same course where they're going to play. It's the best players in the world, and low score still wins. Obviously, not having fans takes a bit of the atmosphere away and the ambiance and the stress, I would think, and the tension. And I was asking some players about that yesterday, and they said, yeah, there's something to that. But your question was, you know, is it's essentially the same. I mean, golf's been able to do it because of where they are. You're not indoors again, and they have been out here since mid-June. And I think they've done a spectacular job in how they've tested and how they've kind of moved forward in the face of it all.
Scott Van Pelt with us here on ESPN Radio. Check out SVP's new podcast, SV Pod, wherever you get your podcast. Scott, what should people, he's always the story wherever he goes. So Tiger's played one tournament since the PGA Tour has come back here. What should people expect from Tiger this week? I will take him just being in contention, Scott, but I have a feeling that's a stretch considering how little golf he's played.
I think you're right. I mean, I don't know how you can expect him to play well when he just hasn't played at all. And, you know, you can, I'm sure I'll be guilty of, you know, saying, oh, here in the President's Cup, he was 5-0 and he beat John Daly in a World Golf Championship event here. That was, you know, more than a decade ago that happened. And sure, it's nice to show it at a place where you played well, but basically anywhere where Tiger has ever played, he has at one time or another played well. Right now, you're talking about having played four rounds of golf, basically, you know, this calendar year. I just think it's unreasonable to expect that he would play well. As I speak to you guys right now, it feels like it's about 55 degrees. There's this fog and wind and a bit of mist, and with a bad back, you know, that certainly didn't help him last year at a couple of the venues where they played majors where it was cool. You know, his back has been bothering him. He's been honest about that. So, I mean, look, if he plays well, it's never a shock. But if he played well here this week, it would be surprising simply because he hasn't played where so many of these other guys have been playing a bunch since they came back out.
Is Bryson DeChambeau likable?
I mean, for the fans, yeah. The guys on tour do a lot of eye-rolling with him. And I think it's good. I think the fact that, like, Brooks Koepka basically is all but calling him a nerd and like, trying to, like, rub his hair like a big brother – and they constantly are kind of jabbing at one another back and forth. I think that's kind of fun for golf, that there's almost like a wrestling, you know, sort of a feel to it. His play, I'll say this, yesterday, I was walking with a number of players, and he is a topic of conversation. Like, when a tour player who's won majors says, hey, have you seen a guy hit the driver yet? Oh, this is on the range. I said, no. He goes, go watch. Like, they don't talk about people like that, Dan. Like, they don't speak about people like, go watch the sideshow. And another player just said what he's doing is astounding, and they speak of him with awe, but they all kind of wonder, can you keep doing it? Can your body stand up to this? And because he's quirky in terms of, like, all of the different ways that he looks at sort of the physics of it, and he's got all these numbers that he's crunching that they don't, I don't think he's beloved by guys. This is just me saying, using a lot of words to say, I don't think a lot of guys are particularly fond of him, but I like watching him. I think he's great for the game.
The SV Pod is available wherever you get your podcasts, and he will be available in San Francisco PGA Championship TPC Harding Park. It's this week. Thank you for being on with us. Always good catching up with you. You haven't started yet. Forgive my ignorance. You haven't started yet in Washington with the studio show, have you, or am I an idiot?
No, you're not an idiot. Well, they're two. Those are two different questions.
He's an idiot, Scott.
In this case, you're not an idiot because, no, we haven't moved. Actually, right after I get back from this, we pack the stuff up and head south, and we'll be on from D.C. sometime in late August. On or around the 24th is what we're eyeballing. So I will see you all from there then.
Looking forward to it. He does an exceptional job. As always, thank you, Scott.
Always fun, boys. Be well.
Telephone number 786-456-4837. Let's bang through these calls as quickly as we can because we've got a lot of people who want to talk to Ron McGill as always. Christopher, you're on with Ron McGill. Go ahead.
Yes, Ron. So it's kind of a sad subject here, though. But earlier this year, my mom's Shih Tzu, the night before we put it down, it let out a massive yelp. And it was like weird, like almost like seized up. So I thought that was kind of strange. And I remember my sugar glider, my flying squirrel, doing something very similar about 2 years ago. The night before I found it dead, it just let out a big, yeah! And is that something that, like a sign like an animal's living too long? Or is there something, is that just natural? Is that nature?
You know, it's hard to say. It really is. But there is confirmation, even in people sometimes, before passing, very similar, very close to before passing, they will have a burst of emotion, so a burst of energy that occurs, and then it's soon after that they pass, and that's something that I guess you see in animals also.
Parker, you are on with Ron McGill of Zoo Miami. Go ahead, Parker.
Is there an endangered species or an extinct species that if you had to eat, which one would it be?
If I had to eat?
Yes.
Is that what he asked?
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
Yes.
None. I mean, I wouldn't want to have to eat anything that's extinct or endangered. I mean, you know, unless I was dying and it was the only option.
Well, you are in this scenario. So who are you eating? What are you eating?
I would go with a gaur, which is the largest wild bovine. And I'd go for the ribeye portion of it. Good ribeye, yeah, on a gaur. It's a huge, large cow, a wild cow in India that's endangered, actually.
Ron, what if you had a lineup of animals that would go extinct if you ate them or you die of starvation? Would you put an animal out of extinction or make an animal extinct to survive yourself?
Yes. I know that sounds really selfish. But, you know, that's life, guys.
It's fine. Well, don't apologize for that. It's why you're on the top of the food chain and survival's important. Like, that doesn't make you a bad person. It just makes you hungry and desperate.
That's usually your window to go, really, really? So you're going to have animals go extinct for you, you selfish? That's usually where you come in with that line, Dan. So I was just kind of preparing. I'm sorry.
America, I am sorry, America, that A, our zoo expert and animal expert is filled with such rage. I also want to apologize publicly on behalf of Ron McGill because he just said that he would take a species from endangered to extinct because he's hungry. He is one of the most selfish people.
There you go.
There's plenty of humans, Ron.
He should be extinct himself because he is so selfish.
There you go, Dan.
Doug, you are on with Ron McGill of Zoo Miami. Go ahead, Doug.
Wow, Ron. Hey, Ron. Are wasps and hornets the biggest jerks in the animal kingdom?
You know, they do go into a frenzy, and unlike bees, they can sting repeatedly without dying. So, you know, I think people look at them as being pretty aggressive and not realizing what kind of, you know, positive contribution they make to the world, but they are important in controlling a lot of pests, so we have to keep that in mind. But yes, as far as wasps and hornets go, they are aggressive, they can sting repeatedly, and they will come at you with a furor that is unmatched by many other animals, so they're not my favorite animal.
I do this with very little confidence that his microphone is unmuted, but Greg Cody, what do you have for Ron McGill?
Hey, Ron, you guys at Zoo Miami just gave a fertility test to a large tiger. Tell us what's involved with that in terms of the number of people involved, the amount of sedation.
Well, you know, we got to have total sedation, of course, because we're going to be sticking an electronic probe up the rectum of that tiger to stimulate the prostate. It's very painful for me personally to watch. This tiger is, of course, in La La Land, but we do that. We have a team of probably 6 or 7 people around that tiger. We have somebody with a collection cup. We have the other person working the probe. We have another person working the electrical charge that goes into that probe that then causes this contraction and then causes the sperm to come out to be collected. And then it has to be examined under a microscope. Unfortunately for this poor guy, though he was not shooting blanks, they were highly diluted, very few and far in between, and therefore he was pronounced as being infertile. which was kind of a sad case because he's a very valuable bloodline. So now we're looking at hormone therapy to hopefully maybe do some testosterone therapy and see if we can build up the concentration of those little swimmers, because as I said, they were few and far in between. But it is part of research, part of science to help preserve the species.
All science, little swimmers, probe, everything that was said there was in the name of science. Aaron, you are on with Ron McGill of Zoo Miami. Go ahead, Aaron.
Geez, I got to go after that answer.
Right.
Hey, Ron, sometimes an unruly child will be asked the question like, hey, who raised you, a pack of wolves? But I was wondering, under perfect conditions, if the smartest pack of wolves were traveling together and they stumbled upon an abandoned infant, could they all pull together to raise that kid?
They would eat it so fast.
yeah, that's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen, basically. First of all, if the kid is still nursing, the dog cannot produce the milk that's going to sustain a human being. But more likely is that they'll probably eat the thing. The baby. I don't mean to call it a thing.
Jesus, Miguel. But, Miguel, no, honest to God, honest. Miguel, honest to God, this segment today. What are you doing?
Dan, listen, everybody's under a lot of stress, Dan, okay? So I slip every now and then. But no, the wolves are not going to raise the little babies, okay? Forget any movie you saw. Neither are any apes or anything like that. It's not going to happen.
Roy, what do you have for Ron McGill?
Ron, how does music affect animals? Let's say that Kenny G has an alto sax and he's facing down a bear. If he starts playing his alto sax, would this bear, like, be happy, or would it maul Kenny G?
I don't know if the bear is going to be happy. It's been proven, on a very serious note, it's been proven that music does sedate animals in certain scenarios. So we have found animals that react positively to certain types of music, not necessarily music that maybe we like. It's all individual. But if a bear is coming to attack Kenny G and he starts playing his, there may be a hesitation, like, what the heck is that? And then soon afterwards, it would be over. Unless, of course, he put his hands up and said, hey, bear.
This is the darkest segment that we have ever done. For those of
when you start a segment with a guy asking, listen, my animal screamed right before it died, and then the day before I saw another animal scream right before it died, where do you want me to go from there, Dan?
Okay, well, I didn't expect you to go straight from there to eating endangered animals into extinction, killing a baby. Killing a baby with wolves and then killing Kenny G. I think that all of that is excessive.
I wasn't killing the baby. The wolves were probably going to kill the baby. Listen, I'm just giving you facts. I don't want to give you some Disney World fairy tale here, okay? I'm giving you facts. And yeah, Kenny G playing the whatever he plays is not going to stop the bear if the bear, they may hesitate because what is that sound? But that would be a very small hesitation and then it would continue on with the mauling.
Did you really just come on Disney Air and disparage Disney fairy tales? Is that something that just happened?
Dan, please just call me next week.
I blame Billy. Right. Impossible spot, Billy.
Billy started all this. All right, fine. Hang up your landline angrily and get out of here. We're all under a lot of stress. Thank you, Ron McGill. Unbelievable. Referred to a child as a thing, but certainly got all the terminology right during the insemination of the tiger, didn't he? Yeah.
Expecting to have Baron Davis here in just a minute on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Been great with us the last couple of days. Here's your SportsCenter update. And by great, he's fouled up the show in a good way, in the most awesome way. The deadline for NFL players to opt out of the 2020 season will be Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern. The Big 12 presidents and chancellors approved a scheduling model for the upcoming college football season that will include 9 conference games and 1 non-conference game. And finally, the world's first speeding ticket was issued to an England motorist on January 28th, 1896. He was fined for speeding at 8 miles per hour in a 2 mile per hour zone. Greg, you should pay that ticket. SportsCenter brought to you by SportsCenter brought to you by Blue Emu Maximum Pain Relief. Works fast and you won't sting. It's pharmacist recommended odor-free pain relief for muscle pain, backaches, strains, sprains, or even arthritis. There's no stinging or burning involved. It's simple pain relief. Blue Emu Maximum Pain Relief works fast and you won't stink. For all the latest headlines and information, tune in to Sports Center on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
So, Stugatz, how do you want to handle this? We need Baron Davis to unmute his microphone and to turn on his camera. But who do you want to handle the buttering up, you or me? Because he didn't like the way we started this yesterday. So do you want to handle you're excessively chummy. Do you want to handle this or do you want me to handle it?
I think me and the guys should probably handle this. I think until further notice, you should probably just stay away. I think you're the problem. That's kind of where.
All right.
Where
well, I'm you go ahead and handle this with Baron. I don't know if his microphone works. I do know that right now we don't have him on camera, but let's see where this ends up. Please go ahead.
All right. Well, Baron, how was, because we never asked, so, and we haven't spoken to you since. How was your afternoon? Let's start here. How was your afternoon yesterday?
All right, the microphone is not working. Oh. We'll get Baron Davis right in a moment, but a good start so far. We will figure out. Yeah. This is what happens around here with us. We tend to beat a dead horse. So if it wasn't, funny and careening enough on Friday, we added the bonus on Monday of a bad phone line. Now we're throwing in technical difficulties as well. He's gone from the chat now. He's totally gone. We do still have Larry Fink, though. Larry Fink, his publicist, is still there. Larry Fink, can you unmute your microphone? Your camera doesn't work either, Larry Fink, worldwide leader in sports.
Larry, how was your afternoon yesterday? Maybe we should start there. Is Larry Fink with us?
I don't know if Larry Fink is with us. Larry Fink, does your... How has this gotten worse? You explain to me. Do you realize how low we have put the bar on all of this? We have put the bar through the ocean floor, and yet we can't jump over it. Wait, Larry Fink is there. Larry Fink is there, but he doesn't have a microphone that's working, and I don't know why I would want to talk to Larry Fink.
Because he's there.
Well, well, this isn't going as it should be going. It's probably going as Baron would have it go anyway. So even though he's not here, he's really here in spirit with the way this segment's playing
out. Fair enough. Okay. We will see if we can get Baron Davis and Larry Fink back on the phone. But I do know that Greg Cody, this allows us to actually talk some sports, Stugatz, because there is a new study. I believe this is a Drexel professor, and the study is how the NCAA's empire robs predominantly black athletes of billions of dollars in generational wealth. And Greg Cody has been very loudly, hey, the scholarship is enough. They shouldn't be paid. The athletes shouldn't be paid. But the way they break down the funds on this, Stugatz, is basically a whole lot of money is going to coaches and administrators and, you know, a high percentage of older white people, while athletes with their scholarships, even at Duke and Alabama, are basically getting 1/6 of what they should be getting for their labor. The study shows that these guys should get about $1 million for 4 years, given what basketball and football make before they have to share it, the predominantly black sports, before they have to share it with the rest of the athletic department and specifically the commissioners and the coaches and the people who are up high. So does any of this change your opinion, Greg, on the scholarship is enough?
I'm in favor of limited stipends for players in sports that generate revenue, particularly men's basketball and football. But I've never seen a credible breakdown of how that would work. You know, the star quarterback deserves to be paid in a way that the backup punter doesn't. And so somebody give me a plan to weigh. You know what I'm saying?
Is Baron Davis now there as Greg Cody has given you his dusty, musty opinion on college sports? Does Baron Davis have a working microphone now? Oh, for the love of God.
He has to unmute his own mic. There we go.
He's, all right,
guys. Baron. Hey, okay. Baron, what's up, man?
Go ahead, Stugatz. Have at it.
Baron, hey, what's up, man? We haven't spoken to you, obviously, since yesterday, and I think Dan's been going about this all wrong because he doesn't ask basic, courteous questions. How was your afternoon yesterday? How'd it go? What'd you do?
Man, it was excellent. You know, I want to say something, though. What's up, fat face?
Hold on a second. Hey, wait a minute, Baron. Look, you came in nice, Stugatson. Look at what I get. Baron, for an NBA player.
That's what it says on the video.
Baron, for an NBA player, you are also guilty of fat face.
What?
They always said that. They call me like the baby Shaq of guards. I was just bigger than everybody.
Baron, I love your face, and I loved your crossover and the shimmy, and I'm wondering, and you're underrated. People don't give you enough credit for just how great of a basketball player you were. By the way, did you have a good morning this morning? Anything exciting? What happened there?
Nothing exciting, man. I haven't got my coffee yet. Just kind of waking up, give me a little stretch, a little, my little 7 minutes of yoga. I'm starting a new workout. It's called 7 minutes of yoga, 7 minutes of Pilates, 7 minutes of getting to it, you know, and it's a 21-minute workout with me. I don't IGTV and all that because basically all that is free. You know what I mean? It's free. So, I've been charging people and, we had about 1,300 people in our workout this morning. So, I'm not working out alone. All paying customers $100 a workout. And we're giving scholarships to you and to people like you, Fat Face. We're going to give you a scholarship so you can come on in and get that face right.
What are you doing this by video? I don't know what's true and what's not true. A conversation series that you hosted in June to create change, is that a true thing or is that not something?
Oh yeah, no, that's legit. Our town halls, I created Business Inside the Game to give athletes and people in our culture opportunity to talk about their wins in business. For so long, the media always talk about, guys going broke or, and created this fear. So I was like, let's go find the guys who are actually doing well. And we started to create these workshops and town halls and conversations around how do we better, ourselves as athletes? How do athletes and investors connect? We start talking about social justice. We talked about, equality as far as economics, right, for blacks and browns. And so that's why I created it, to really start a narrative and start a change of discussion, right, that'll start to push our people, closer to the forefront.
Chris, go ahead.
Baron, I have a few creative ideas I want to pitch to you. I imagine being an entrepreneur like you are, a businessman, you get pitched ideas. But before I pitch my ideas, what's the worst business opportunity you've ever been pitched?
Are you new?
I'm a little new, yeah.
You haven't heard from Chris? Okay, yes, that's Chris Cody, son of Greg Cody, a gratuitous nepotism hire.
Yeah, I mean, we ain't doing the privilege thing right now. We gotta ask somebody else to ask a question.
Roy, wow. Roy, you want to have at it? Go ahead, Roy. Wow.
What was the worst pitch you have ever received?
Who is this kid, man, asking me questions like that? And then someone in this Zoom. Yeah. Before I was on the radio, I couldn't see you. Now I can see this kid. This kid ain't got no facial hair, man. Oh, yeah, you do. It's red. He got a red beard.
All right, hold on. We're going to come back with Baron Davis, who does not take questions from privilege. Roy, will you answer it from Roy?
Yeah. Me and Roy, we got to have a conversation, Roy. I got to find out how they treating you over there, Roy.
I'm still getting paid, Baron.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Wait a minute. We can't have you guys unionizing around here. Hold on a second. Let's go to commercial and regroup.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. The Dan Le Batard Show is brought to you by 303 Protectant. 303 Protectants and Cleaners keep your car looking new longer.
the show somehow continues to descend into the sewage. Baron Davis lifts us up and drags us down at the same time. He has refused to answer the question of Chris Cody. Roy, can you please ask Baron Davis the question to see if we can get a better response?
What's up, my brother? What is your worst investment pitch? Oh, everything's going on all right. What's the worst pitch you ever received for an investment?
The worst pitch I ever received for an investment was, dare I say, some erotic soap made out of the mold of porn stars. Not a porn star, but like, I guess, a not really good porn star. And it was a soap company, and it was erotic soaps. Yeah, that's it, bro.
Tony,
that was the weirdest one.
Tony, that's a good answer. Tony, do you have a question for Baron Davis?
I do, Baron. Thanks for having me on the show. Do you like pineapple on pizza, Baron?
I didn't invite you.
Oh, wow. Okay, he doesn't want to talk to Tony.
What's up, my brother? Do you like pineapples on pizza?
What's up, bro?
Roy, your timing's exceptional. It's exceptional.
My apologies. Do you like pineapple on pizza, Baron?
Pineapples and sometimes pineapples and pepperoni, Roy.
Oh, that's delicious.
I think, yeah, you know, it got to be a late night, though. It got to be a late movie night. But pineapples and pepperoni, that's my jam. Bill, that's a good question, Roy.
Thank you.
Billy, do you have anything? Do you have anything for Baron Davis, Billy?
Hey, Baron. So we were talking earlier about with our animal expert, if he would eat an animal and make it extinct if it would ensure him staying alive. Would you eat an animal into extinction if it guaranteed your survival?
Man, I don't even... That was one too many words. I can't even digest that, what you just said. I don't know if that was a question or a statement. Y'all good at that.
Roy, can you please re-ask the question?
What's that, brother? Would you eat an animal?
Roy, how do you get that wrong three times in a row, Roy?
I have to fill in the pauses. I got to fill in the silence. There was 2 seconds of silence.
How was that possible? Go ahead and ask the question.
Would you eat an animal into extinction?
For the love of God, Roy.
To make sure that you survive.
Hey, Roy, say it our way. Hey, Roy, say it our way, man. Say it with your chest, Roy.
Would you eat an animal into extinction?
Yeah, of course. Yes. I would definitely do that.
Greg Cody, do you have a question for Baron Davis as the old-timey Miami Herald columnist?
Hey, Baron, what do you think of The Rock buying into the XFL, huh?
That was a question I asked on Twitter like two days ago.
Yeah, but you didn't answer it.
Yeah, but if you look at my timeline, you'll see, like, there's a bunch of answers.
What's that to my brother?
Is that Roy?
Yeah, that's me,
Roy,
man.
What's up, dog?
Hey, man, I'm hanging in there, man. Hanging in there. What do you think of The Rock buying the XFL?
Hey, man, I thought, you know what? It's interesting, right? Because The Rock is a big star. He loves football. I think it's cool because, you know, look at him, man. He didn't make it in football, but now he's on a football league. So I want to shout out to The Rock for just being an inspiration to everybody. And, you know, I think that the XFL got, you know, it got a chance now that it got a face. I wouldn't mind, you know, owning me an XFL franchise. If I can get in contact with The Rock.
That's hard to do.
Yep.
Yeah, I know. I even tried to audition at one of his movies. Not really to be in the movie, but just to meet him. And that never happened.
Baron, what's the worst part about getting a haircut?
What's up, my brother?
Roy, I hear you, bro.
Hey,
what's
man.
Happening?
Hi, man. Hanging in there. What's the worst part of getting a haircut?
The worst part of getting a haircut, I would say, is when your phone is ringing and it's an important phone call and you got to put it on speaker so everybody in the barbershop can hear your conversation while you're getting a haircut. I would say that's the worst part. You know, I have my barber, me and my barber go all the way back. Shout out to Chuck Taylor. Every time I get out of line, he smacked me in the back of my head with some of that alcohol to make me straighten up.
Greg Cody of the Miami Herald, do you have another question for Baron Davis to close us out?
Baron, you can't...
This was the Dan Le Batard Show on ESPN Radio.
We live in a racist country.